This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Risk is our business.
It's like nothing we've dealt with before.
Golly, Jim, I'm beginning to think I can cure a rainy day.
I can't change the laws of physics.
Welcome, everyone, to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated podcast that covers the original series. I am Ken Tripp.
And I am Zach Moore, and it is time to go back. To go back, Ken, to the beginning. 50 years ago today, the National Broadcasting Company, NBC, launched Star Trek with this episode, The Man Trap.
Zach, I have to say this was a stroke of brilliance on your part. A commentary show on Standard Orbit centered on the very first episode that launched Star Trek into history on this very day. That is very, very... When you came up with it, I'm sitting there going, duh, why didn't we think of this before? Great idea.
Well, thanks, Ken. I appreciate that. It just, you know, being on Standard Orbit, we're in a unique place here on the network because, you know, we're celebrating 50 years of Star Trek, 50 years of the original series, and then we have movies coming out, you know, so it's this is a great show to be on. So I'm happy to be in our phase three settled in here as the new hosts of Standard Orbit. So it's exciting to jump into this The Man Trap. Now, obviously, The Man Trap was the sixth episode produced from the, obviously, as if, you know, look, if you guys are subscribers to a Star Trek podcast, you probably know a lot of this trivia, but we're going to say it again anyway. Even though it was the sixth produced, it was the first broadcast. So this was Star Trek's first exposure to the world 50 years ago today, September the 8th, Star Trek Day. So
that's right. And you know what? I'll tell you, Zach, it's important, though, I think, to even though most of our, if not all of our audience, knows a lot of these facts. We do have a lot of new people that are into Star Trek now, and I think that as we get closer to as it got closer to this date, let me put this correctly, that there's been a lot of hype. There'll be more hype. Facebook will be lighting up as it will throughout the day. It's special, and there'll be a lot of attention to this, and I think it's a wonderful thing. There's a lot of fans out there that are younger. And while they've probably seen a lot of these episodes before, not a lot of them have seen them in chronological order unless they have the DVDs or they watch on Netflix and whatnot. So it's important to note this history. This is a milestone day. This is when Star Trek broadcast itself. Like I said, it has been a living, breathing phenomena for 50 years, which is incredible. And let's enjoy this commentary more than others because this is the one that started it all.
So how this commentary is going to work is we're going to queue up our player, be that, you know, and you do the same at home, be it DVD or Netflix or Laserdisc. I actually have the original series on Laserdisc. I actually watched Man Trap last year on September the 8th on my Laserdisc. So, but
that's incredible. Okay.
The entire original series on Laserdisc, yes. And, you know, you can either, you know, do that, queue up your player, watch along with us, or just listen to it, you know, as a background audio commentary. You know, some of you guys know the episode well enough, you probably don't need to watch it again. But it's, you know, it's always fun to be able to experience it in new ways. So when we give you guys the cue, we're going to count down 3, 2, 1, play. And so when we say play, press play on your player, and we'll start the commentary. How's that sound, Ken?
Sounds good, sir. Take us out.
All right. 3, 2, 1, play.
And we're off.
Yep.
So what do you think of that Met Jeffries design starship the first time that was seen for all these audiences on NBC, huh?
The design of the Enterprise, very unique for the time. Didn't have any rockets, didn't have any, you know, tropes of other science fiction. Very unique design there. So are you watching the remastered version or the original version, Ken?
I've got the remastered version.
Me too.
And even with the remastered version, it looks like a very large orange wall now that they've landed on the planet.
Yeah, the HD doesn't really do that any favors.
No, it doesn't.
Notice there's no red shirt, although this guy here, the third guy, mm-hmm. he is the equivalent of a red shirt in this episode.
Yes, I guess he would be.
We have Kirk giving McCoy a hard time about them being down to meet scientist and his wife, the wife being one of McCoy's ex-girlfriends. So interesting that, you know, this is the first episode of Star Trek broadcast. It's a McCoy episode, you know, and McCoy is not even in the main credits yet. You know, I mean, he's in the end credits with like Scotty and Uhura, yet he's the focus of this show.
It is interesting. And I'm not sure of the history, Zach. Maybe you know a little bit more. Why did they choose to broadcast this one first? Was it the monster of the week element, trying to get people, you know, surprised and kind of what they're used to with a sci-fi show and kind of walk them into what the show is going to be?
Well, there were a lot of factors. I mean, they had Where No Man Has Gone Before was in the can, and that's actually my favorite episode of the original series. But it would have been very misrepresentative of the show itself, right? The costumes mm-hmm. are different. The cast is not set. So you can't really show that one. Right. Corbinite Maneuver was produced first and really works as a great introduction, but I think two factors. One, the special effects weren't ready for that, right. And they wanted to get the crew off the ship onto the ground, like you said, like kind of an action Monster of the Week environment. So that's why they went the man trap, because your other options would have been Mud's Women. Not really. You don't want to start off a show with that, in my opinion. And Enemy Within or Naked Time, those are very deep personal kind of stories, a little too specific. So this is a good way to ease audiences into this new idea of Star Trek. So
yeah, well, it makes sense to me. It's funny now, because I listen to melodic tracks, and when we were down in Las Vegas, we met Bichet's friend Andy there, who does the music for Star Trek Continues, mm-hmm. and now I'm listening to the floats and the notes and everything that's popping up, and it all has a different relevance now, you know, because I've heard it talked about so much. So it's funny how much more complete all this is.
Yeah, Andy Ferber is a great guy. I talked to him a lot at the Las Vegas as well. We'll have to have him on the show. He told me that he has a PhD in TOS, so, and he'd be happy to come on the show. So we'll definitely have him on to talk about some of the music, because great music. You would not hear music like this underscoring any scene on a TV show today, you know?
No, you definitely wouldn't. It was very unique. And yeah, it is good to bring on those folks that have that kind of knowledge on the show, although it can be a little intimidating at times.
Hmm. Interesting here in this scene, you know, we have, we're establishing that Nancy Crater looks different to all three of the men of the landing mm-hmm. party. You know, McCoy sees her as the young woman he knew years ago. Kirk sees her as he expects to see her as a, you know, late middle-aged woman. And then this blue shirt, red shirt guy sees her as some girl from a pleasure planet, which is a very inappropriate thing to say when you meet someone's wife on a planet.
I know. Yeah, that is a wee bit inappropriate, I suppose.
And that's the teaser there. That's it. We you know, nothing. No one has died yet. Nothing crazy has happened. We just this relatively horny individual has followed a beautiful woman off into the wilderness. So we're gonna see what happens to him when we come back.
And I can tell you, you know, that never happens to a sailor on shore leave. So it's you're gonna have to suspend disbelief and just imagine that could possibly happen after being on a ship for many months, right? Mm-hmm. So. Anyway, yeah, interesting beginning. I wonder how audiences watch the show. I mean, right in today's world with social media, and you know, we have a very different lens on Star Trek because we've seen these shows 100 times. You think they would have noticed the difference in the aesthetics between The Man Trap and Where No Man Has Gone Before, or Corbinite Maneuver? I always wonder if they go, hey, what, you know, what's going on? Why is Spock different? Or is it because it's week to week and it's new, it gets right past you?
Well, you play him as the third episode, right? Where No Man Has Gone Before. Mm-hmm. If you're watching the remastered shot, this is the new shot for the remastered episode of the expanded landscape. It's nice. But it's weird enough to have it as the first episode, but then you can say, oh, okay, this came before the rest. But to just randomly show it as the third, that's even stranger.
Yeah. No, I understand. I like how they would divert a starship, a 1,000-foot-long starship, 400-some-odd people, to give a medical exam to some people out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. Just that concept in of itself is pretty interesting.
They were just on the way, I guess, huh?
I guess. And, of course, the wonderful reaction.
Which you'll get as required by the book.
That's right. You will do this.
So interesting here, you know, we hear the captain's logs. The captain's logs were something they were added actually after the fact in this episode. A lot of my trivia, by the way, from this episode comes from Mark Cushman's excellent book, These Are the Voyages, Volume 1. I bought that. I got to meet Mark and buy his books at Star Trek Las Vegas. So that was cool. They've been on my wish list for a while. It was a perfect excuse to finally dive in and get them. And they were talking about the captain's logs. And in these early episodes, I know for a fact here and then in The Enemy Within, they're actually set in past tense, which is interesting. And actually makes a lot more sense because it's as if, you know, Kirk, after this mission, he wrote his log and you're hearing his log at the appropriate times, as opposed to like later on in the show, they're like, oh, we're currently being captured in a jail cell. But it's like, where are you recording this? It really didn't make a lot of sense. So it makes more sense now.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, it's interesting. If they had kept with that concept, I think it would have been very interesting, although it could have taken away some of the drama if there's peril, right? Because then you hear the voice and then your body says, your brain says, oh, they're going to be okay. But, you know, it is a storytelling adventure. And I think that they probably could have done some sort of a mix, I guess, you know, on how they could capture this. Right. I don't know. It's interesting, you know. But they've gone beyond just captain's logs to personal logs to medical logs to first officer's log, 27 officer, 6th removed log. I mean, it just gets interesting how they do all this stuff. But I can tell you, though, that there are such things as ship's logs and departmental logs. And even today, with all this technology, there's still green books, and sailors and officers still to this day write those logs at whatever time interval that they're supposed to be done, whether it's by hour or by day or by whatnot. So it is interesting that that still continues, and it happens well into the 23rd century.
Mm-hmm. All right, sounds like something's happening outside. Let's see what's up. That's not suspicious at all.
No, not at all. Did he just reach right into his mouth and pull that out?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the first thing I do when I see somebody down. Now, I know you're supposed to follow the ABCs when somebody's down, right?
See, Kirk takes this very seriously. You know, he's like, I just lost a man. And we get to the bottom of this. You know, I think people have the misconception that, like, oh, red shirts are dying every week. And say, hey, it's just part of the job. But, you know, whenever Kirk loses a member of his crew, he takes it personally. He takes it seriously.
Yeah, as he should.
As you should, right.
That's right.
So now McCoy and Kirk are both seeing Nancy as the middle-aged Nancy that Kirk has seen her as before.
And McCoy is now as well? Oh, yeah, he's trying to adjust his eyesight a little bit.
Yeah, because, you know, that first scene was actually, you know, it's very interesting to see the different points of view. I mean, it's a pretty unique thing for the 60s at that time. I wonder if a lot of people caught that. It was pretty confusing for them. And then also, you know, the M113 creature, the salt vampire, it's not a shapeshifter in the traditional sense. It's a mental kind of projectionist shapeshifter. Have you ever seen the TV show Heroes, Ken?
Yes.
All right, so you know the first season there's a character like that who uses, you know, mental projections and to shapeshift, so to speak, right? And so she's not physically changing, but it's the projection she's sending to other people, and that is what the M113 creature is doing here.
How did you come up with that name?
Well, that's the name of the planet, M113.
Ah, okay, M113 creature, yeah. Okay.
So we're here to these are the kind of trivia nuggets we're here to share with the listeners, Ken. So.
Yeah, you are incredible. You, Bishay Atos, man, you're just at a whole different level. You know, now 25 years ago, I knew all this stuff, but not quite as much as well as you guys do. But I can tell you that guy in the center seat, that's Mr. Spock. That didn't get past me.
So this is, you know, Spock and Uhura having a nice moment here. This is one of the scenes that people point to in the Abrams timeline when they're like, see, there was a, or the, I'm sorry, the Kelvin timeline, as we call it now. I'm like, there were some seeds of Spock and Uhura going on back in the early days of the show.
Right.
And of course, she mentions Vulcan having no moon, which is
well, it doesn't. It has Delta Vega, apparently.
Yeah,
but
whatever that is.
Whatever that is, which
planetoid, I guess. I don't know.
This was a good play for the both of them. I think it was pretty interesting. Uhura fishing and Spock looking terribly uncomfortable for a person who has no emotions. It is funny. Well, controlled emotions. It is funny how they are betrayed quite often.
And, you know, and this really establishes, you know, speaking of the no emotions, that he just found out somebody in the landing party died, and Spock's like, understood, and Uhura's like, how can you not feel about that? You know, I mean, Captain Kirk's one of your best friends, and he's like, well, my emotional state will not change the situation, you know, and they will call me if they have assistance. So that really establishes Spock pretty well right there, I feel.
I think it does, very, very much so. And I like that that kind of banter that goes across the bridge when they have those types of moments. Because, you know, I don't know where this term came up a lot, but I've seen it in Star Trek 100 times, and I've never seen it 25 years in the military, that request permission to speak freely, sir.
Hmm. does no one ask for that permission? Or?
No. Usually, you know, like the CO, the captain, whatever, will say, hey, you know, opinions, ideas, you know, where are we going with this? What about this plan? That's one way. If everything's already been put out there and people have questions or problems, they can ask amplifying questions. Depends on your audience. And then you can also switch it again where it's just, you know, just the captain telling people that this is the way it's going to be. And you can tell by tone and directive, this is not something that's going to be questioned, you know, that it's been vetted already. So
now they're establishing that McCoy can't even figure out why this guy's dead. And they don't understand why the molding on his face was there, or, you know, that plant in his mouth really had nothing to do with it. So there's a mystery that's developing here. So
yeah, I mean, it has been 300 years since there were measles, right?
Yeah, so. Right. We've cured all disease on Earth. It's wonderful.
That's what it really looked like.
And here we have Kirk again taking it very seriously that they've lost a crew member.
Right.
And, you know, McCoy's like waxing about, oh, well, Nancy, she looked younger. And Kirk's like, look, I don't care about that.
That's right. You know? Just figure this out. Do your job. Right. Focus. It's important.
See, M113. There you go.
I heard it. I just was listening intently to the tense of his log.
The cause of death was not poison. Like they're walking around drinking, like, I assume that's coffee on the bridge in their little paper cups.
Yeah. Well, they're super ultra modern paper cups, I think.
The retro, you know, it's coming back into style in the 23rd century, so.
Mm-hmm.
Record tapes. Although we still call them tapes. You know, when I say, oh, yeah, I'm going to tape a show. Or did you tape this, tape that? I mean, I'm talking about my DVR, but I still say tape because, you know, I grew up in the age of VHS. So tape is part of my, you know, lexicon. But I don't know if truly in the 23rd century they'll be calling things data tapes and stuff.
Well, it's 25 years before VCRs and all that fun stuff even existed. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. Cassette tapes would have been just around the corner. Reel-to-reel would have been what they were using back in those days, right, mm-hmm. in the mid-60s.
Where were 8-tracks? Was that the 70s?
That was late 60s and 70s as well.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Fascinating. Here's Spock said fascinating.
Yep. First time. 15 minutes.
Order.
Yep. 15 minutes, 12 seconds into their broadcast of the Mantrap was the first time that Spock said fascinating. I bet you Atos couldn't have asked that question if I asked him that way. Bishay could have.
Yeah, probably. I do wonder, I guess, you know, we've never been able to test this, but if you did lose all the salt in your body, would you just drop dead instantaneously?
That's a fair question, not one that I'm qualified to answer.
See, Kirk was giving a hard time earlier, but now they're kind of patching things up here.
Sort of, kind of. You know, when he says, I should have been focusing on my job, perhaps you were. He wanted to make sure that last piece is there, is, you know, and that's important for good leadership, especially, you know, captains and just people in those positions as well. Don't forget what your primary mission is, because other people can get hurt. Or if this had been something else and it took him a long time to figure it out because he wasn't focused, worse things can happen.
Yeah. Like how this guy's like, look, man, you can't beam down here and interfere with our work. You're, well, is it really that pressing? You're archaeologists.
Yeah. So if you put gold and blue together, you don't get red either. You get green, right?
Okay. True.
You know, yeah. There's still no red shirts around.
That's interesting. You know, I mean, I know that obviously in the cage and where No Man Has Gone Before, there were no red shirts. They were tan shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Uhura's wearing red right now, so they hadn't figured out that trope yet. But it is interesting that all these crew members, you know, this is actually, I believe that this is the only episode where multiple people die in an episode and none of them are wearing red shirts. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure.
Well, I guess we'll see as we go here, but I think you're right about that. It's just interesting too. I think, I mean, they're all figuring out what the color patterns were going to be at this point.
Mm-hmm. You know, so security and whatnot.
Well, yeah, security, comms, and engineering were all red. Functional support areas, but none of them are related. Which is kind of interesting, you know.
Like they should either have like one color or like a lot more colors. Three doesn't quite, you know, get the point across.
Yeah. Or if there was a system involved, and I think they were trying to create that, because even back when this was made, you know, they were looking very much at how the Navy did things, and and while officers and enlisted uniforms are different, their colors aren't really radically different. Khaki and blue, you can tell the difference. But on the flight deck of an aircraft carrier, this is where you see multiple colors. So,
well, that's all well and good, Ken, but we all know that Starfleet is not a military organization. Yeah, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. So anyway, so you can look out on the flight deck and you can tell by the colors of what they're wearing, which each person should be doing. And by having that, because you have a person who watches this the whole time, making sure that people are in the right place so nobody gets hurt. But, you know, you can, you know, yell to the guy in red and he's the one in charge of, let's say, armament, and the guy in blue is, I don't remember all the colors anymore because I was never on a carrier, but, you know, this guy was responsible for fueling, this person was responsible for maintenance, this person was responsible for launching, you name it, they were all color-coded, and it actually works very, very well on a ship, and that's you know, a lot of this idea here makes a lot of sense, except that the patterns really don't make sense, you know what I mean? The idea is perfect, right, but they haven't fleshed it out yet.
Oh, and now blue shirt, red shirt number two is dead.
Yep.
And blue shirt or green shirt, red shirt number three is dead. So what, I mean, they've come down here to investigate because in their records they found that, or in Crater's request here, they requested more salt, which apparently in a hot environment the body needs more salt.
Not anymore. Science is not my strong suit. Not anymore. No. That's funny too, huh? That salt tablets and stuff like that were given, but being in some pretty hot environments myself, I can tell you, nope. I've never said, oh, you need salt. It's always been water.
Yeah. Stay hydrated.
Stay hydrated. Hydrate or die, as they used to say.
Well, here, I mean, obviously the entire episode revolves around the crux that, okay, people have to start dying and you know, start this whole thing off. But they had been living, you know, the Craters had been living on this planet, and this creature had been living on the planet with them for a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't need to be instantly start killing people. But then it's like, as soon as other people show up, you know, and right there, that's the first time we actually see the change on screen.
Right.
I don't know if it was supposed to be a mystery until now or not, but there it is, if there was any doubt. But it's like, why did this creature just go on this ridiculous killing spree immediately? Like, could you not waited like an hour and they would have beamed you down some salt without killing this guy, you know?
Well, I think it's instinct, right? It
because it is more of a creature more than an alien, right? Is it?
Well, I think that it's like anything else. I mean, think of anything that you see people that are addicted to that can't stop once they start. And, you know, because it's smart enough to know that if it kills its partner, it's done. It'll die itself, right? But in this case, you know, it's got all kinds of good food resources coming its way.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if you can camouflage yourself and get away with it, right, why not? I guess that's the thinking here.
Yeah. I like the direction of this movie, too, when they show the close-ups of the eyes and the stuff and the face, and it just, you can peel away the emotions underneath, right? You can feel like that person there is not who it's supposed to be. They do a nice job with it.
So there's somebody operating the transporter. I don't think it's Scotty. In fact, I don't think Scotty is in this episode.
I don't believe he is either.
No. I think of it, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Because he was in Where No Man Has Gone Before, so he was there in the second pilot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you see the technician in the jumpsuits. Did you ever see a Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea?
I'm familiar with it, but I've never watched it.
Yeah, if you ever watch it, the same jumpsuits are in both shows, and they were produced pretty much around the same time. And that, I think that's where that concept came from.
I always interpreted it as like they're like the Chief O'Briens of the original series time. You know, not quite. You know, well, you see Lieutenant Kyle, and he's in a jumpsuit sometimes, and sometimes he's in a uniform, so actually I'm not too sure.
No, he wasn't a lieutenant. He was a chief back then.
Oh, really?
In the original series. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. He was a... we saw him again in Star Trek II as Commander Kyle.
Mm-hmm. Here's Grace Lee Whitney. It's Janice Rand.
Yep.
Now I heard, and this is kind of rumor / urban legend about Star Trek, is the salt shakers on that Rand had there. They originally looked like McCoy's medical scanner. Like they was said, okay, let's invent some really futuristic salt shakers, and they said, okay, those are too futuristic. I can't even tell that's a salt shaker. We need to get something a little bit more contemporary. So that's the urban legend. I don't know if that's true or not, but you'll hear that in a lot of Star Trek discussions.
Yeah, I've heard that too. A similar story, yeah. Flirty birdies, yeah. Huh? Those crews.
How about that, huh? There's a lot of things date this show, and that's one of them. The attitude towards certain things is just funny. It's the 60s, right? It's the 60s.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can't say that attitude is gone completely either.
Oh, yeah, though, that's for sure.
It certainly isn't as overt, but even in today's Hollywood, there's lots of scenes like that going on. Objectification. Now, here's the best special effect in Star Trek history now.
Oh, my gosh. Great Bird of the Galaxy. Little Gene Roddenberry reference there. Oh, boy.
I don't know. Gertrude looks pretty good to me.
It's a good question, Sulu. Why do people call an inanimate object she, Ken?
Because she's a beautiful woman and we love her. It's not a ship. Right?
So this is an interesting bit of continuity, too, unintentionally, perhaps. But, you know, Sulu was not the helmsman in Where No Man Has Gone Before. He was the astrophysicist.
That's right.
And here he's in the botany lab, you know. So, you know, he has other interests outside of just the helm station and the sciences.
Yeah.
You see those little Windex things there on the table with Sulu? I always find that amusing that TOS has those.
Oh, yeah, they're all over the place.
It's the 23rd century. They got a spray bottle of 409 in sick bay and wherever else. There's those salt shakers.
Yep, and very weird cubed food.
Yeah, I always wondered how those taste. Like if it tastes like there's your hand going off on the plant there.
What do you mean? No, that's a plant. I don't know what you're talking about. A hand.
Clearly not a five-digit human hand sticking through a hole, that's for sure.
No.
It's an incredible special effect.
It was. Hey, it's practical effects. Abrams is all over that. You saw that in The Force Awakens. They didn't mess around. Practical, practical, practical.
He's gone space happy.
Yeah, it can happen.
Well, I like that, you know, obviously this is a creature and is not familiar with the Enterprise, so they're just kind of wandering around getting their bearings, you know, not sure what's up. And then, you know, the visual cue of it continuing to, like, put its hand up to its face when it's thinking. I mean, that's a nice kind of way you can tell like who's the creature when throughout the show, because right. No matter what form it takes, it always kind of does that. And here we're about to get a nice little in second moment with Uhura.
Yeah, she gets a little eye candy to look at.
And you know, I'm not sure what it is about these early episodes of TOS. Maybe they were just seeing like what would stick or not. But you know, you had Janice Rand around. You had Uhura getting moments like here with Spock. Here again, she's singing in Charlie X. Like, you know, it TOS in the earlier episodes actually did feel a little bit more like an ensemble show. They kind of spread the action around to more of the cast, yeah. It seems. And then eventually they settle into the big three. But it's nice to see you forget that, you know, it's a wider range of a bigger cast here that they take advantage of.
Yeah, I'd have to remember now, Zach. I'm not sure. I know that as shows evolved and whether you were used or not, if you were under contract, you got paid. But I got the feeling that that wasn't the case at this time.
Yeah, there are a lot of day players. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So if you weren't used, you didn't have to spend. They didn't have to pay you. And I think as budgets got tighter and things along those lines, they stuck with the main crews more and more.
Yeah.
You know.
So we haven't seen the creature kill anyone yet, but we're starting to see he's about to raise his hands, or she's about to raise her hand, so you can kind of guess what happens when they get killed. Luckily, Uhura got called to the bridge, or she would be dead.
Yep, and I wonder if that's part of the space vampire piece of it, too. You know, getting caught in the look of his eyes, like she was really mesmerized there and just, mm-hmm. you know, couldn't function well. I like the continuity too of the hand to the mouth that they do with all the
there it is
all the different critters. Yeah,
and I like this in when you see people off duty, you know, they're not wearing their overshirt, they're wearing that black undershirt to kind of relax a bit. I like that because so often in Star Trek you see, hey, we're at Commander Riker's playing poker and we're all in our uniform. You know, it's like, don't you guys ever relax? You know?
Oh yeah, but they looked like pajamas anyway, so I think they were pretty comfortable.
Well, it's a nice delineation between, okay, they're off duty now. I mean, you don't see it very much moving forward, but you see McCoy here. And they establish that there's these sleeping pills that he gave Kirk, which will come into play later when McCoy gets taken out of the picture.
Right. But I think you make an excellent point. There is a lot of, you know, when you are on a ship, for the most part, you are in uniform all the time. And the only time you wouldn't be is if you're in PT gear. Right.
Or that guy in a space suit for some reason.
Well, yeah, a little environmental work he's got going on. You know, you got to have your, as they call your PPE, right?
Right.
Personal protective environment suits.
Now here's Kirk. He was drinking coffee earlier. And now he's just eating. This is very casual day on the bridge here on the Enterprise.
This whole episode is very casual. The back and forth between Uhura and Spock was very casual.
Right.
The yeoman going down to see Sulu. Remember, Sulu is a lieutenant.
Yeah.
She's a yeoman, so she could be not even a petty officer, a non-commissioned officer. And it's, oh, thank you, Janice, you know, that type of stuff. So it is casual. It is definitely casual Friday on the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Love those nameplates for the crew, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, surely those will be what we have on ships in the 23rd century.
All nameplates like that? Yeah. One thing they will have is that section that you saw. So the reason they have the little 3F and whatever that other number was, so they know if somebody's hurt or if there's damage in the ship, they know exactly where to go. They just don't say, hey, you know, it's down on deck 6. They'll go, no, it's after frame 3, right. Section 2, and off they go.
So the creature here is kind of moving on to McCoy, huh?
Yeah, he's a good-looking guy. Why not? Yeah. You know?
She says, I like your feelings better. So, you know.
Yeah. It's interesting. Now, this actress, I think she was at Star Trek 50, wasn't she?
I don't think so. Not that I recall.
One of them was. Oh, I thought one of them was. I can't remember now. I'll have to look it up. There were some different cast members there from all different eras.
Right.
And a lot of them from the original series. Some of them holding out really, really well, considering the timeline. Uh-oh.
There's spacesuit guy. He's dead.
Yep.
So that's our fourth casualty now, none of which red shirts.
Yeah.
There you go. So it's deck and section. There you go, Sulu.
There you go. Poor guy. No wonder why she's being calm with McCoy. She just ate.
So now, yeah, now we have the present tense captain's log. So even in the episodes, within the episodes themselves, in these early episodes, they're not sticking to one tense, future, present, or past.
Right.
Medical department alert.
Right. All hands on deck. I wonder how many doctors are on that ship.
Yeah. Well, there's Dr. Mbinga from season 2 and 3. He's in a couple episodes. He's the only other doctor that I'm aware of.
Yeah, that kind of pops up.
Mm-hmm. So I'm glad they established the fact that he's sleeping pills. So McCoy, he took one. That's why he's out. Right. So that's a nice way to just... He's not just asleep. You know?
But he did put on his uniform shirt again.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you see if there's any hesitation in the move of the camera?
Yeah. Oh, there. I saw the wall color change a bit.
Just a little.
But I give them credit. That's a nice creative shot. And I'm sure in 1960s television, it was pretty cool. I mean, a lot of people watched this in black and white, you know, back in the day.
So I like the fact that he pushed the button to open the door. So there's been a lot of jokes about the Star Trek doors, right?
Right.
So if somebody's upset or whatever and they're just leaning on the door never opens. But there's nothing to distinguish why, once you get to past a certain threshold, why the door just doesn't open automatically. So I guess the computer can sense emotion and can sense
dramatic,
all kinds
dramatic
of stuff.
Timing, turbo lift, yeah.
Yeah. Now this is where the Navy SEALs learned some of their tactics on how to escape and evade fire and capture your enemy. So this is a U.S. Navy training film. So watch closely, everybody.
I was in the middle. Come on, guys.
Yeah, I mean, didn't they just catch the 21st century perfect in that? Somebody's talking or whatever, and the next thing you know, oh, somebody's on their cell phone. Like, that takes precedence. Happens all the time.
Spock cutting it. So Spock has now cut into his communication with the Enterprise. Interesting.
Yeah.
Add him to the group text.
Mm-hmm. Plot thickens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Green looks better with polka dots. Looks like a heffalump or woozle.
Well, Kirk, Shatner had a little trouble there opening the communicator.
He did.
General quarters.
GQ, security 3.
So 3, is 3 better or worse than 1? Like, is it more intense?
I don't know if it's better or worse, or if it's a type. You know,
like woman in pants there. Woman in pants. And stock footage from where no man has gone before. You can tell by the old costumes there.
Yep. So I guess 3 is intruder alert. That's what it is.
Because, you know, when you hear people say, I want a level 1 diagnostic, or I want a level 3 diagnostic. Well, which one is which one is more? You know?
Yeah. I would assume a 1 is more, but that's just my thinking. All right, here we go. Here we go into some incredible contact combat skill set right here.
This is the kind of action NBC wanted in their first episode.
Yeah, they got the lasers going.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a lion statue that
he's
next to?
Yeah, it's an interesting architecture these aliens had.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk being a good analyzer of the situation.
Yeah.
I like that Crater has a Cage era laser. Kind of see the cheapness, if you will, or the reusing of props kind of adds a certain amount of continuity to Star Trek just by the fact that they're reusing props, and I really like it.
Sure. Here's a great scene, huh? They're almost getting the whole ship, the whole bridge.
Mm. So, I mean, it's interesting here because there's a lot unsaid about the creature and what it's thinking this entire episode. And, I mean, this is the creature right here. And why it has gone up here to, I guess, research what's going on, you know, and you want to, you think to yourself, like, what is it thinking?
Right. Right. What's pretty good here, too, is the cross-functional talents of the bridge crew, which we see demonstrated all the time.
Yeah, Sue's there.
Look at that move. Oh, yeah. You see that move? I couldn't have shot him. There's no way.
The shuffle of the feet is key.
Oh, it really was. I mean, I think he went 3 inches one way, 4 inches the other, and that'll make all the difference. I love it. I love the tactical stuff here. It's all fun.
Here we go.
Yeah. Dun, 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 dun.
Displace as much sand as possible.
That's right. Of course, his position was just given away.
Put that
by
on
beep.
Silent.
Oh, God. We love these shows so much. And it's got some really good stuff going on here.
Ew.
I like that. I think the coolest thing about the Enterprise is that its main phasers can be set for stun, too.
Oh, yeah.
They can put a whole continent
planets,
to sleep,
yeah.
I guess, in theory, you know?
So they've slowed down Crater's voice here because he's been stunned. I like that. It's a cool side effect of getting hit by a stun phaser.
Yeah, it is.
But not being knocked out. A lot of people don't really like, what's wrong with the audio here? No, it's an intentional choice.
Mm-hmm. It makes a lot of sense.
So now we're finding out what's going on from Crater. He compares the creature to the buffalo, which is, yep. I'm not sure if that's the best analogy, but...
Yeah, it's relevant, I think. You know, at this time, too, the endangered species list was really just getting up there. And, you know, in today's world, it's funny how many things have come back. You know, I mean, so whole... species like the bald eagle and other, they were just about gone when I was a kid, and the idea of ever seeing one was beyond. Now I see them, you know, somewhat frequently, so it's amazing. So it's a very adept analogy, I think, because at that time that was on a lot of people's minds.
Spock always in the past tense, being analytical.
Mm-hmm.
So that's creepy that he can't even really remember when she died, you know, because it's been, although his memories have kind of been blurred by the fact that this creature has taken over her identity.
That's right.
Oh, General Quarters 4, Ken.
Yeah, I don't know what that means, though. It means nobody touch anybody.
Yeah, exactly. That's why it's not the best analogy.
I agree, it's not the best analogy.
But I get what they're going for. I mean, so what do you think? Because there's a lot of criticism toward this episode, Ken. A lot of people say, well, this wasn't our best outing. I don't know if this is what we should have shown as the first episode. Even many of the cast, I know Leonard Nimoy has said that. You know, you look at an episode like this, and you compare it to an episode like Devil in the Dark, right? Where it's kind of similar, yet they take the moral high road, and they don't really kill the creature. The Horta in that case, but here they just execute the creature. Do you feel like that's like a discontinuity between, like, you know, Starfleet, Star Trek, or do you feel like both approaches make sense in the context of each? You know what I'm saying?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, and it's been a while since I've seen this episode, so I guess we'll see in a few minutes. The stun just didn't seem to work. And they had to keep leveling the amount that they were up in the game. And that's what I understood it to be. Maybe I'm wrong. You know,
that's a good. I'm not sure. We'll have to look when that happens.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Have to see when that happens. But I you know, plus it already had Kirk in its grips.
Yeah, I mean it's right there, right? I mean you can't.
Yeah, and if you looked at the stun setting, you know, obviously the professor was knocked down or whatever, but he wasn't completely incapacitated. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if he would have been able to keep his hands up or not. But to your other point, I don't think this was a bad episode to launch with. I think that there was an identity that came along with science fiction back in these days, whether it was Lost in Space or, you know, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea or any of that stuff. You know, you did have that kind of a creature element. And I think in trying to infuse and get people to watch by pulling in something that was a little bit common, but adding this extra dimension to it, you know, the mystery to it, the sci-fi element, the ability to get into your head and see what you want to see, that's where it really gets interesting to me.
Right.
So I think it was okay.
Well, I think part of the disappointment on the you know, the cast and crew of the show that NBC picked with this one is because Star Trek was supposed to be something different. You know, it's supposed to be a different brand of sci-fi. And like you said, there are a lot of tropes in this that are from, you know, Lost in Space and a lot, yes, of those, you know, era shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think common tropes, but scale and scope was much bigger.
Mm-hmm. So this is interesting. Kirk is going to, he's basically said, look, Crater, We're gonna let all this go if you just tell us where the creature is. You know, I'm not gonna hold you responsible for the death of these crewmen, but you need to tell us if you can see it. And so this is kind of a really warped relationship here between the professor and the creature, huh?
I would say so. Yeah. 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 It delves into an area that's a little creepy.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Well, just, you know. But that's the unsettling part of it is what makes it so interesting, I feel. It kind of sticks with you more than just a generic monster of the week. Like there's lots of deeper, creepier things going on here. It's unsettling and it like sticks in your mind.
It does, yeah.
And here we have the creature masquerading as McCoy, part of this conversation, kind of trying to be its own defender. Mm-hmm. But it can see now that they've pretty much said, no, we got to kill it. It's killing our people, so...
Yep. It is interesting, too, that he says he can see it, and it's right in front of him.
Yeah, it's right there.
And he says nothing.
The Shatner reacting move right there.
Yep.
True serum, of course.
Of course.
It's good save there, creature.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, I guess we can use that. Yeah, I mean, I don't like to, but sure.
That's the only way to win.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure. Pointing at your guy who I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I guess there has to be a point of addiction here, because obviously the creature does not need this much salt to survive, right? It's been surviving just fine off their salt tablets for a year, maybe two, right? And yet now it's just gone on this killing spree. So maybe, like, once it gets a taste for fresh salt, it can't, you know, wants to keep quenching that thirst, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's like, I guess... You know, it's like a person who an alcoholic who's been dry for months and finds himself in a bar. Mm. They get a little bit over the top, I guess.
An open bar.
An open bar.
So it's turned on Crater, killed him. Now, in one of the original drafts of the story, they were not going to kill Crater. And,
oh, is that right?
Yeah, and at the end of the episode, he was going to beam back down and search for another creature, because this was his whole life on this planet, mm-hmm, which is, you know, maybe a more poignant way to end it, but... You know, I think it's just fine. It kind of tied everything up nicely here, yeah. Tied up all the loose ends, which is a tragedy all the way around.
Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bigger room than I thought.
That's a cool camera move there. You know, they followed him in the door, then swiveled around. Lots of dynamic camera moves in this episode.
Yeah, I don't recall. I don't know enough. Where's Mike Schindler when I need him? You know, did they have the over-the-shoulder handhelds going in those days, or was everything on a dolly and pretty heavy? I don't know.
Creature kills. Like, seriously, like, you just killed a man, and yet you see this little bit of salt, and you're like, oh, I gotta have that. You know, it's very instinctual.
Come on now, what's your favorite chips? Popcorn. You just can't stop.
Chili cheese Fritos, well.
Uh-oh.
If you insist.
Uh-oh. Okay. Hope you have lots of toothpaste.
Yeah, see, like, look at that. Like, that desperation of, like, a junkie. Like, oh, the drugs. Yep. I can't let him go to waste.
Yep. And I like how he has the phaser now.
Mm-hmm. And then we see the hypnotism start to kick in.
Yep. He can't move.
And the suction cups in the hands, a very interesting way, like, to transfer the salt. I like that, you know?
No.
Of course, Spock.
Some kind of version of Vulcan Kirk Fu there.
Right. This is before Nimoy had figured out the Vulcan neck finch. We just have Spock brutally beat this woman.
Yeah. And of course, he was yelling pretty loud, too.
Right.
A little bit of emotion there.
Well, and there was discussion, again, this is comes from Mark Cushman's book, about, like, look, at the end of this episode, like, does everybody see Nancy the same? Like, do we need to cut between all these shots? And, mm-hmm. And boo, there's the creature, right? Now, yeah. I think that's a very effective creature design. What do you think?
It is. Ken? It is. It is an awful-looking thing.
It's hideous, and it's, like, somewhat sad, and it's very alien, and Shatner's really selling it, as he always does.
Yeah. Just a shoulder injury, though.
Mm-hmm. And it's wearing clothing, so it's not like an animal. You know, it is part of a civilization.
Is it?
Yeah, that rag kind of is like kind of like a makeshift dress of some kind.
We'll have to see again after this shot.
Now, I didn't see him.
I thought it was just fur.
I didn't see him crank up the setting there, Ken.
No, he didn't. He didn't.
Yeah, see?
Oh, it's got a net.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I see what you mean. Yeah.
But hey, you know, the climax of the first episode of Star Trek, it's got the Trinity in this one scene, so it kind of sets up the trimulative? I'll just stick with Trinity, but...
Yeah, nice shot here from the new remastered version of the ship, yeah.
That's some of my favorite stuff in Remastered is like a new planet orbiting effects, so we don't have the same thing over and over, of course, in the 60s, but here we got some more dynamic angles.
Yeah, now I saw a pretty cool shot on Facebook where they were actually able to upgrade the whole bridge.
Oh, I saw that. That is so cool.
That does look cool, and you know, it's interesting, and I think it ties in well to a lot of the things you're hearing on Facebook about Discovery, how Brian wants to change the aesthetic and make it more believable, and you know, that makes a lot of sense to me. And just like the reboots did, I mean, the technology's come so far since the original series, you've got to make it look believable today, mm-hmm. with capabilities beyond what we have. And
there's a cool reverse angle on the view screen there.
Yeah, like that's pretty remastered. Cool.
Yeah, I just hope they don't completely throw out the aesthetic just to update it. That's
well,
I
think you can have a balance, so to speak, but at the same time, they did okay. I mean, we'll have to see what it comes out. Like I said, I did like the JJ versions of the bridge and stuff, and I hope it's an eyesore or whatever. Mm-hmm. I get it, but it looked pretty cool. I mean, especially the window view screen stuff was pretty neat.
Right.
You know. But anyway, hey, that was a fun episode to watch on Star Trek Day. Huh? What are your thoughts?
I know, right? I mean, it holds up. You know, it's like I said, it has a bad rap, but that's a solid episode of Star Trek right there. There's a lot of intrigue to it. It adds an extra layer than your standard Monster of the Week stuff. Lots of emotional things at play, and a good emotional climax for Bones there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's funny, you know, I think that when I was a kid and I was watching these shows, and they would cycle through it, what, every 3.5 months or so, or 4 months, you know, 79 episodes. It didn't take long.
Yeah, one a day.
Yeah, and then when you come back and you'd watch it again, sometimes because of the weight of one episode versus the lightness of another, or the technical abilities that were used, you can kind of come back to something like this, and you just go, yeah, okay, that was kind of silly. When you watch it on its merits, based on time passage, what they were trying to establish, not being, I guess, deluged with a lot of Star Trek, you're right. That episode plays very, very well. It was a great episode. It was fun to watch, and I enjoyed going through this commentary with you very much.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun to look back on what audiences saw 50 years ago this very day. It's crazy to think that was Star Trek. That was all Star Trek was for 1 week of time. That hour television was the entire Star Trek in its entirety for the public. So.
And 50 years ago today. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Amazing. The show still looks good after 50 years.
It does. You know, and you just got to look past that. I know a lot of people can't get past the aesthetic of the 60s, but you got to embrace that. You know, I can't hold that against a show that's 50 years old. Like, oh, it looks like it was filmed 50 years ago. I'm like, well, that's just a silly argument, you know. And yeah. even for the time, the production value was great.
It was. And I mean, I know color TV was brand new, so they're trying to get the vibrancy of those colors. But, you know, it was funny because you watch it through the lens of the past, and you see kind of the guys staring at the girls and all that stuff. Okay, I get that. And that might be, considered not politically correct today. However, I would say that a lot of the things that they showed in this episode would have been eye-opening at the time. There were no women on warships at all, zip zero, in 1966, and there's all these women on starships with prominent roles doing good things. And you know, to me, if you think about it, especially too, women of color, you know, in Uhura and so forth and so on, amazing, right? I mean, think about it. This launched 50 years ago, and you saw things right off the bat from a whole new light. And I think that's pretty cool. I think it set the stage up well for what the show is going to be about. And I'm not saying it was even close to being one of the best episodes of Star Trek, but it's definitely a very good episode of Star Trek.
I would watch next week if I were watching in 1966, you know?
Sure, why not? Why not? It's all good stuff. Cool.
Well, I've had a fantastic time discussing the Mantrap here on Standard Orbit. This isn't the only topic we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week, so here's a quick look at some of the other things you might have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
I saw most of the original series with my grandfather between the age of like 2 and 5. So a lot of my early impressions are based on, can a 2 or 5-year-old basically sit through an episode and find something they like in it? Okay, Kirk is running around like a horse, which is kind of fun, I guess.
Standard Orbit.
When it was asked of him if he would be in a role or would be willing to take a role of Captain Kirk, he has come to grips with the fact he is too old to do any of that stuff. And it just wouldn't work, which I thought was very telling. And a great joke about Leonard Nimoy. You know, it's one thing when you go back in time and you still find yourself being old. Yeah. That means you're really old.
That was a good line.
That was a good line.
Meta Trex.
The only thing it was missing was a Geordi PowerPoint.
Yeah, about the closest thing we have to a Geordi PowerPoint in Star Trek Beyond, Mike, is Spock trying to point out the location of Uhura's radioactive tracking device necklace.
He gave her a radio tracking device necklace.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So you can find us on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can always stream or download the MP3 file from our website at Trek.fm and grab the RSS link as well. If you're an Apple user, please be sure to hit the subscription button. That makes it easier for our listeners to find the show when they search for iTunes. And we love new listeners, so please, please, please subscribe directly to Standard Orbit as well as the Trek FM Master Feed and help us increase our visibility for new listeners. Also, we would ask you to help us out with Patreon. Well, what is Patreon? Well, Patreon is the method that we use to fund the network. So I would encourage you all, if you can afford it, to go on to patreon.com, that's patreon.com/trekfm, and become a patron. And for as little as $15 a month, you can join Trek FM's Patron Roundtable, which is wonderful. I mean, this is how I found my way onto the network. And who knows what could happen to you, right? You might find your way. And then if you're kind enough to donate $25 per month or more, you get associate producer credit for the shows of your choice. And that's a big deal. And speaking of that, We would like to say thank you, always, to our associate producers for this show, for Standard Orbit, Renee Roberts, Richard Rutledge, and Aaron Harvey. Thanks so much for all of your support for both Standard Orbit and for Trek FM through Patreon. You can find Renee on Twitter at mres_1701. Richard, you can find at RUT8972. And you can find our buddy Aaron Harvey at GeekFilter, all on Twitter. So look them up, follow them, and thank you again.
And if you'd like to get in touch with us here at Trek FM, you can always find us on trek.fm/contact and look into the sidebar on the show page. Or you can go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. And please leave us a voice message that we can play here on the show. You can hear your own voice on the podcast. Pretty fun. So feel free to do that. And you can also contact us through Twitter at TrekFM or through Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM and the Babel Conference. To find us at the Babel Conference, type The Babel Conference, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook or go to our website at trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar. Babel Conference is a great way for you to connect with fellow listeners and the hosts of the network. So as for me personally, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach, that's MoreOnZach. And I'm also the host of my own podcast called Always Hold On to Smallville, where we talk about each and every episode of that young Superman TV show. And we're on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. What about you, Ken?
So you can find me as well on the Babel Conference. That's where I like to hang out. It's my favorite spot on Facebook, to be honest with you. It's the safest, funnest, most respectful spot to talk Star Trek on the entire interweb. So look for me there, and feel free to also look for me on Facebook at any time, and feel free to IM me with questions or if you just want to hook up and be friends. Or you can get information from me via Twitter. Yes, I am on Twitter now, at Boston SCPO. That's Boston Senior Chief Petty Officer, SCPO. And I look forward to communicating with you in between these shows, and especially when they drop. That's when it's a lot of fun. So we'll talk to you soon.
So thanks, everyone, again, for listening. And join us next time here on Trek.fm for another episode of Standard Orbit.